This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week's episode was recorded on January 24th, 2016. On this week's episode, Tia Vasiliou, Kate Scotchless, and I, Mike Rappin, discuss comics we read recently and what books we're excited for this week. Following that, we touched on comic book series we read, dropped, and what happened to those series. Towards the end of the episode, the topic of fan fiction brought about a deeper discussion of who's writing books and who's reading them. That's really vague, but you'll get it when you get there. And now, this week's episode. This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin, editor and chief for Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week are two fantastic people, Tia Vasiliou.
Hello.
And Kate Scotchless.
Hello.
How are the two of you doing this week? How have comic books been?
Comic books have been great, and I'm snowed in, so I've had a lot of quality time with them.
The giant East Coast blizzard Jonas has taken both of us.
It's the beast in the east.
Exactly.
I have also been reading a lot because I've been pretty sick, and so I've been staying in bed reading books and comic books.
What kind of stuff have you been reading? We'll just jump right into things. What have you been reading recently?
Well, for me, I have oddly read a lot of number threes recently, which I think I started a lot of series at the same time, and so they just happened to all be kind of syncing up here.
Okay.
There was like Thor number three came out, and Vision number three, and Red Thorn number three, and Snowblind number two. And then I had picked up that Image Humble Bundle and have just been through that thing, and it's been amazing.
Did you read any of the Invincible books?
Not yet, no.
Okay. When you get into that, let me know, because that's like my bread and butter right there.
Okay, I will do. I went all in on that and got like everything they had, and I am zero regrets.
Yeah, Bitch Planet Volume 1, what's up?
Right?
Everybody should own a copy of that volume, seriously.
My mom even liked it.
Oh, really? Does your mom typically not like comic books, I guess?
No. She is trying to get back into them. She used to read Fantastic Four and Captain America when she was little. And I was like, you should just try this. And
so
she texted me.
There's no good Fantastic Four right now. So it's like, try something that isn't Marvel right now.
I know. I mean, I have a whole folder of panels of Reed Richards just being such a douche. I can't even look at his face.
Oh, that's great.
I have this great one. It's really old. And he's like, I told you to shut up, Susan. And he's slapping Sue in the face.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that was a earlier documented case of a Marvel male character slapping a female character before Ant-Man and the Wasp happened. And yet everyone's like, oh, Ant-Man, you know, terrible person. But like, Reed Richards, he did it first.
Is terrible. Sorry.
Who was the original wife beater? Let's see.
That's who it was. I'm pretty sure it was Reed Richards. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but I think I at least at one point read an article where it was like, you bastards, it was Reed Richards, and someone was freaking out about it in defense of Hank Pym, but either way, they're both kind of shitheads.
I mean, there's no defense of Hank Pym either, let's be honest.
Yeah. I don't think being second makes it any better.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
So Kate, no, that's all right. Kate, so what was the best thing you read last week?
I don't know if it was the best, but the most exciting for me was Red Thorn, because I feel like it's hitting its stride. And it had a kind of rocky first two issues where it has this really good concept, but it was doing a lot of this telling it through like the dialogue boxes and stuff like that instead of showing it. And it was kind of, I don't know, limping along, but I feel like we've got the training wheels off and it's really getting into it now and it's going well. And I'm excited because I was nervous that this wouldn't work out. Like we talked about, sometimes science fiction and fantasy series have great concepts that then aren't executed very well, and it looks like this is going to be a good one. So
cool. Tia, what did you read this last week or so?
Well, I have two that I would like to talk about, one more than the other, mostly in its defense, because I feel like Fonogram was perhaps a little misunderstood on the show last week, and
what are you talking about?
It's all right. It's going to be fine. I'm here now. And it's like when you find a tortoise in the middle of the road and it's illegal to move them, right? Like you have to call someone and I'm here now. And so I'm gonna handle it.
Okay, Tia, so Phonogram Volume 1 and 2 was in my image bundle. I started Volume 1 and it was like, I don't know if this is for me. Like, so, there's so many references to things that I don't even know what...
Did you see the glossary in the back?
Oh, no, because I'm reading it digital and didn't go to the back.
I know, that makes it hard. So there is a glossary in the back. And honestly, I've heard the creative team themselves tell people they should start with Volume 2 because the way they describe it is that they're more like albums than a sequential story that where you have to start at the beginning. And Volume 2 is a little more accessible, I guess. I actually like Volume 1 better, but that's because I do get all of the references. I was really into Britpop, which is weird because I was like at least a decade too late and also not British. But, you know, So when I read Rue Britannia, which is Volume 1, it's like I'm feeling nostalgia for this moment that other people were experiencing their nostalgia for it when it actually happened, which was way before then, if that makes any sense. But the Immaterial Girl is a little bit different because I think that it could be more universal. It's basically about one of the Faunomancers, Emily Astor. She got her power by literally trading half of her personality to like the god of music videos. So she kind of took stock of herself and she cut out all of the weak or depressed or sad or like pathetic bits of herself that she hated and discarded them. And so in the Immaterial Girl, this part of her who's called Claire basically like figures out how to switch them. And so she comes back and I can really relate to, sadly, Claire more than Emily. And the 6-issue arc is basically about Claire and Emily kind of having to reconcile in order to move forward, which everyone can relate to that, right? There's a scene in issue 3, I think, where they both go back to visit themselves as a child, and she's like viciously ripping down posters of these things because she's gonna like change and be a different person from then on. And I mean, I remember doing that when I was 10, you know, like I remember as a kid, like really racing towards this idea of like adulthood because I thought that there was like an inherent power in it. And then it's interesting in the Immaterial Girl, I think, you know, Emily is like approaching 30 and so there's this whole idea where she's almost like, well, all the characters really, they're like trying to stave off adulthood in a way. Because it feels like they're giving up some kind of power that they had. And so it's a nice story about reconciling the parts of yourself that make you feel powerless. And how do you move forward with that? And I mean, when Jamie McKelvey and Matt Wilson are the artists involved with a story like that, I think that when the story is told so beautifully, it makes it more palatable and more easy to kind of digest for yourself.
See, when you tell it like that, it sounds really interesting.
I know, right?
Like, it makes me want to go back and read it. You've kind of sold me. So how does this compare to something like Wicked and Divine?
Well, I think that...
Wicked and Divine should have been Phonogram Volume 3, as far as I'm concerned. That's what it felt like in the first couple of issues. But sorry, continue, Tia.
Yeah, they're definitely very close cousins in that... I think that it just is different ways of approaching how people define themselves or get power from the things in pop culture that mean a lot to them, whether they are the creators of those things or the consumers of those things. And I think that everyone can relate to feeling propped up by by the media that they like and that they consume, or like building an identity out of the stuff that you like. Mm-hmm. But I think that what's nice about the Immaterial Girl is that it sort of tells the story of how at a certain point you have to be the source of your own empowerment in order to mm-hmm. move forward as an adult. And it doesn't have the answers. It doesn't actually tell you like what that looks like from the other side, but it just kind of lets you know, like, everyone has to do it and it's going to be okay, but you just kind of have to like come to terms with it or it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
Very.
See, now I'm like hooked back into this series.
Right?
Now
I like, I'm like, okay.
Volume 1 and 2. And then when the third one comes out, I'll read that mm-hmm. and it'll all make sense.
I would actually say reading order like 2 or 3. Start with 2 or 3. And then once you like have a little investment in the characters, then go back and read 1. And I think that 1 would actually make more sense after you read 2 and 3. I know a lot of David Coles. I have dated a lot of David Coles, and in some ways I kind of am a David Cole, which is horrible, like this, like the horrible garbage person part of me. Yeah. But, you know,
wait, can you tell us who a David Cole is, because I haven't gotten that far?
He's the main faunomancer in Rue Britannia, and he's basically just like this total douche of a guy who's really selfish and is also a little bit snobbish. A little. He's really snobbish.
A little bit. I think that he's a. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. About music and things like that, and just kind of out for himself. But you know, we all have that part of ourselves, and I think that it can be nice to read stories about them where they don't necessarily have a redeeming story arc, but I don't know, just seeing it, I think, from an outside perspective in this kind of magical, realistic setting, it gives you another perspective on a part of yourself that I think is useful and interesting. And also, I really like all the music references. I actually have a friend who won't finish reading it because he really likes one of the bands that David Cole hates.
Oh.
So how important is it to use the glossary? Like when all these things come up that I'm like, I've never heard of this band or this song or this anything, like, does it really matter, or can I just kind of skim past it?
I think that you could probably skim past it simply because everyone knows what it feels like to really love a song or think that a musician is stupid or have mm-hmm. some kind of connection. You know what I mean? So just like the abstract concept of like, this song makes me feel really powerful, or I think people who like this music are dumb, or those people are mm-hmm. poser. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
you can relate to the thing that it is contributing to the story is the concept more than the actual band.
Yeah, I think that's how I pushed through the first 2 volumes, and not in the sense that I pushed through them, but I kind of looked over those references and saw that idea, and I tried to relate it back to anything that I could relate to, which was at the time punk music, because I was really into punk at the time. So it wasn't Britpop, but it was a genre.
Makes sense.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. I think Fonogram is not the most accessible Gillan McKelvey work, but it's a series that has meant a whole lot to me, and I thought that, you know, and there's no more, they're done, this is the last of the Faunograms, and it was really, I think, a really moving and poignant ending, because it just kind of, it just sort of threw out kind of a, not an answer, but just, it acknowledged the necessity of having to kind of grow up and move on, and that looks different for everyone, and no one can really tell you how it's going to turn out or what it's going to look like, but you have to reconcile with it somehow.
All right.
Okay, now Mike and I are on board. We're doing this. Yeah. We're reading it.
Yay! I'm like a Faunogram Sacagawea. I'm just like guiding you through, guiding you to it.
Well, thank you. Was there anything else that you read this week, or did you have more thoughts on Faunogram?
Well, I could talk about Faunogram forever, but I will move on and just mention Captain Marvel #1 because it
right.
was awesome.
It was amazing.
I need to read it. I haven't read it yet. Like, I have a copy, but I haven't read it yet.
Oh, do it.
So the writers, Tara Butters and Michelle Fizakis, they actually write for Agent Carter, the TV show. This is their first comic, and I thought they did an amazing job. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess they have... writing for TV, you would have experience with writing scripts and showing instead of telling and really using the visuals as part of the storytelling. And I think that this book does that very well. I mean, Chris Anka is the artist and he does an amazing job. And it's a good jumping on point if you haven't already gotten into Captain Marvel. They do a lot of character building within the story. So it's easy to sort of jump in and understand who Carol is. But if you're a veteran Carol Corps member, you'll also, you know, get a lot out of it. It's great. Top notch. And of course, Matt Wilson, who's like my favorite colorist. He's the best. All the Eisners for Matt Wilson. Matt Wilson for president. All of that. If you have it, read it. And if you don't, go get it.
Cool.
I definitely, in my experience, just to like make a sweeping generalization here, I feel like when you're talking about writers coming in from other genres into comics, I feel like screenwriters tend to do a much better job for the exact reasons Tia was talking about, where they already have experiences with script and visual than when authors come in. Because we've had some really amazing authors try and write comics, and like Orson Scott Card tried to write his graphic novel adaptations, and apparently they scrapped them repeatedly, and because he just couldn't do it. And he actually, for the movie too, he did 6 iterations of the Ender's Game movie script before they're like, "Yeah, we're gonna have someone else do this."
Oh man!
Oh my gosh!
Just because,
poor guy.
Well, yeah, and he's an amazing writer, but well, not poor guy. He's also a horrible human being.
He said
but,
some pretty bad things, but yeah. Anyways, continue. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just that very thing where they just don't have the experience with the visual, and it's hard to make that jump. My favorite thing with this iteration of Captain Marvel is, in my experience, with the character has been so hit or miss because she's one of those female characters that frequently gets the awful treatment where suddenly she has like enormous boobs and almost no costume.
Oh, the boobs were perfect.
She actually looks like she can fight in what she's wearing. She looks like an actual human female. It's amazing.
The scene where she's in the gym and she's wearing a sports bra and her boobs are like squished flat. I'm like, yes, thank you.
Yes,
that is what boobs look like in athletic wear.
She has like muscle tone.
Yes.
Instead of this weird stick arms and like a waist that's 20 inches. They did... It is an incredibly refreshing take on the character.
I really need to read this book, I think.
Also, Abigail Brand is good, like such a good foil to Carol.
I love her.
And I really
She's
hope
one of
that
my
they
favorite...
like make a lot of fighting noises.
Goodness.
Yes.
I love her.
To me, the issue read like watching one of the new Star Trek movies. Like, it was very action and personal conflict and I don't know. It was fun.
Well, I mean, Matt Wilson makes those space battles just absolutely
exactly
sing with his colors.
Exactly.
Honestly, yes.
Well, okay. I'm gonna move this train. I'm gonna continue moving this train because otherwise, I think we might just sit and talk about Phonogram and Captain Marvel all day. The two of you don't mind.
It's
no,
true.
It's fine.
What did,
it's fine.
What did you read this week, Mike?
Well, I wanted to talk about some things. I mean,
your opinion matters.
I guess if you say so. This week, I read a couple books. Actually, I read through all of my floppy books, like my physical books that I've had sitting in a pile for a while, and I read The Massive, The Ninth Wave, number 2, which is a series of one-off issues. At least the series seems to be a series of one-off issues all about The Massive before the series The Massive, if that makes any sense, or whatever The Ninth Wave was.
I've never even heard of The Massive. What is that?
Okay, so real quick backstory. The Massive was a book that came out a couple years ago, written by Brian Wood with art by various artists throughout the whole series. Gary Brown was one of the primary artists. And he's actually on the Massive, the Ninth Wave series. But the Massive is about this I don't want to say terrorist group, but like this independent organization of people who were trying to save the world by saving the world's, I guess, environment. And so they would go out and they were known for committing not acts of terrorism or eco-terrorism, but stopping, you know, people from cutting down large swathes of forest and people from drilling oil and fracking and all this stuff. And what happens is this event happens in the Massive series, right? And basically the world's environment just collapses, like giant tsunamis, all the ice caps melt and everything's underwater, but like so all of electricity and basically all of the world society has crumbled because of this, and people have resorted to living life as we did maybe 500, 600, 800 years ago, you know, before any kind of technology and things like that. And so it's about this group of people who were in the ninth wave, which is what they were called, and they were basically trying to survive and dealing with all of the things that they'd done in their past and all this other stuff. Fantastic series. The Ninth Wave, or Massive the Ninth Wave, is a prequel series that tells all of the exploits that the Ninth Wave had committed before this event happened that ended the world. It's an amazing book. Gary Brown's art is beautiful. Jordi Belair on color, she's one of the best colorists in the industry. I love Matt Wilson, but I think Jordi Belair is better, just saying.
I just love that we're talking this much about colorists.
Right. This is why we did a whole episode about colorists, because they're so important. And it's a really good book. I could go on and on about this book, and Xander and I have had very long discussions about this book in the past, and not on the show, but in just between the two of us. It's such a good book. I also read Fight Club number 7 and 8, and after 7 and 8, this book actually feels like a Chuck Palahniuk book. The first 6 issues kind of felt forced, and now we're actually into that weird, deep Chuck Palahniuk territory, and...
You are really committed to give it that long.
I really trust Chuck Palahniuk. I don't know why. Not all of his books have been great, but the ones that were great were outstanding. Like, they blew my mind and changed the way I thought about literature in a weird way. And that's, like, super, super close-minded, because Chuck Palahniuk isn't that great of a writer, but at the time when I was a teenager, it was just perfect for me. So that book is good. I also read The Dark Knight 3, The Master Race number 2, continuing on this train wreck of a story. I'm not going to really say much more than that. But what I really wanted to try to talk about this week was my new favorite series from DC, Superman American Alien number 3. And this book, written by Max Landis, this month's issue was art by Joelle Jones, whose art I think I've seen before, but I can't really place it. But nonetheless, the story is about Clark Kent crashing a plane in the ocean, getting picked up on a yacht, and everyone thinks he's Bruce Wayne.
Oh my God, this is a Superman book I might read.
Oh my goodness. Okay, if you're gonna... I don't really care for Superman as a character. I don't really like Superman stories, but Max Landis strictly said when he was gonna start this book... I don't know if either of you know who Max Landis is. He wrote... the movie Chronicle. He also wrote the movie American Ultra. He also had this big spiel on Twitter very recently after The Force Awakens came out, about how Rey was a Mary Sue, and I don't want to get into that discussion until maybe after the break, but he's basically this son of a producer, I believe, or maybe director who turned screenwriter, and he's done some pretty good work, I would say. I like American Ultra a lot. I like Chronicle a lot. So I figured I'd try American Alien, and I read number 1, and it's about Clark Kent being a little kid, discovering his powers, and he doesn't know how to react to it, and his parents being like, you have to keep this secret, but we're really proud of you. We still love you, even though you're not from here. And it's not about him being Superman. It's about him being a human being and trying to, like, live his life with these powers. And oh man, 3 issues in and my heart is just attached to this book in a way I did not think it could be with a Superman book.
So did they age him quite a bit for issue 3 from, because I read issue 1 too, but
yeah, so each, I think the stories take place chronologically, and so he was a young child in the first one, in the second one he was kind of a teenager, and in the third one I think he's in his 20s. So I think we're actually getting Superman growing up, or Clark Kent growing up, trying to be Clark Kent. He's not even close to being Superman yet. Like, he doesn't even fully understand his powers, where he came from. There's a point in the story where he's yelling at the sky, you left me here, but that's okay. And it's so good. This book is unbelievable. I did not think that it could be this good.
Yeah, I really should check this book out.
It's $4 an issue or $3 an issue. I don't know. It's worth every single penny. Every single penny. Like, every page is well used. They drop characters into the story in very, very well-timed places. It's... Oh, I cannot sell it enough. It's that good.
Well, I am trying to expand more into DC, so sounds like one to add to the list.
Well, I mean, Rebirth is happening, so it doesn't matter. Try all you want. It doesn't matter.
Is this a mini-series, or is it an ongoing?
It's
a mini-series.
It's going to be 7 issues long.
Okay.
Each month, they rotate out artists. So it's Max Landis writing for every issue, but the artists change every issue, which is really cool. I think that's just so that they can keep a good schedule. Like, last month's issue was Tommy Lee Edwards, and if you haven't seen Tommy Lee Edwards' art, look his name up, Google his name. He did the cover to the Mad Max Furiosa book, and I know that book was garbage, but the cover was awesome.
I love that everyone just accepted that that book was garbage.
Oh, yeah. The fact that George Miller's name is on that really surprised me, because
who knows how much he had to do with it, though.
Exactly. I can't imagine him writing that book and also writing Fury Road.
No.
That's
ugh. No.
Anyways, I don't know. Let's move on before I start throwing
unfortunate
up.
Things happen yeah. in comics sometimes.
Yeah. But you know, let's move forward. Let's talk about what we're excited about this week, since this week is actually a humongous week for comics, at least for me and my pull list. So, Kate, what are you excited for this week?
I am also super excited for Cry Havoc, but you stole that pick from me, Mike.
No, we can have the same pick. It's okay.
Oh my gosh.
It's okay.
Okay. Well, I also am super stoked for Black Magic number 4.
How come? What's got you excited about these books?
Okay, so Black Magic is just amazing, and every time it comes out, it's the top of my pull list. Mm-hmm. We are getting into like the real guts of the story now.
Yeah, the Germans are coming.
The Germans are coming, man. Except they're lying about not being German.
Yeah.
So I think we're meant to believe, and whether it's true or not, we'll see, that this kind of mystery character is kind of playing both sides, and that is why we have this historic witch hunting organization that is super against magic appears to also be using magic now to hunt witches. And mm-hmm. So I think that is probably this character who seems to be lying to both sides and is maybe trying to stir up trouble. And there's been some foreshadowing about it starting again with maybe a war between these two factions, the witches and the witch hunters.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like maybe he's trying to instigate a fight again. And who knows why, but he's coming, man. He's coming. And Rowan, our heroine, has warded her house. And so the showdown, it's happening. And I am really excited.
It's going to be exciting.
Also, this book is gorgeous. Like the way that I really like the way that they handle magic artistically. And visually, everything's in black and white except magic. And so whenever something is enchanted or like when a guy was under the influence of magic, we see that the red in his bloodshot eyes and everything else is black and white. But that kind of like,
oh man,
it's just colorist. So subtle, but so good. And then like, and sometimes it's really extreme when there's a big magical action or spell that's, you know, cast, and then you see this explosion of color and it's just gorgeous. And because everything else is so black and white, it's just like, oh, I love it. It's amazing. Also, Greg Rucka.
Yeah, Greg Rucka. He's one of the best writers in comics right now, hands down.
Absolutely. I would read his grocery list. like whatever. Whatever he writes, I'll read it. So,
you know what's funny? When I used to work at an art museum, one of the great questions that you would ask little kids to get them to like think more about what the art means is, what do you think they buy at the grocery store, or what do they have in their refrigerator? It would be a fun exercise to like sort of think about what these artists and writers we love so much, like what would their grocery list look like?
Yeah.
If it would like give us a new perspective on their writing.
Well, It's funny you say that. They're Warren Ellis right now in his newsletter that he does, because I'm a huge Warren Ellis geek. He has been interviewing various writers and artists about what they want to do. I think he's been working primarily with prose writers or prose creators, but at the same time, I think he's going to eventually branch it out to everyone and just asking them, you know, what's your one genre you wish you could write or create on? What's your, you know, day-to-day look like? What kind of devices are you using? Just to like get in these people's heads to see how they work through their creative process, because Warren Ellis for years has been documenting that online and how things have changed and evolved and how he references back to other old blog posts or other creative cycles that he had to say, you know, I used to do it this way and now I do it this way and it works better or works worse because of this, or mm-hmm. I'm getting older so I have to do it this way now and I have to take notes because I keep forgetting things. And that's, to me, one of the some of the most interesting stuff you can read from these people, because their work, you know, if you absolutely love it, then it's a matter of, well, then how do they make that work so good? You know, that's that really interests me.
What's interesting too is when you read when these like old school people are talking about their process versus new people that tend to use the technology stuff a lot more for it, and kind of comparing and contrasting and seeing how, and what I think is interesting is, despite all these changes in what's available medium wise for getting the work done, ultimately the underlying process tends to stay pretty well the same.
Yeah.
In the shower's where the magic happens, man. You have those ideas.
doesn't
matter what you're doing. So,
Tia, what are you excited for this week?
I am so excited for Angela, Queen of Hell, number 4. I am loving that book so much. I just, Marguerite Bennett is killing it. And I love Angela, but she's kind of a hard character to like as a... with any like sense of humanity. She's a pretty cold character. My interest in her initially was mostly just like because she looked cool and was really scary. And throughout her last several books that she's been in, she's had this relationship with Sarah, who she rescued from heaven. And through this relationship, and really I think that the audience kind of can identify with Sarah a little bit more. She's a little more lighthearted and she's really funny, and so you like Angela more because Sarah likes her, if that makes sense.
Sarah,
spoiler alert, Sarah's dead and she's in hell and she's trapped there. And so Angela, being the like big badass scary bitch that she is like going to go rescue her girlfriend. And so she is taking the place over. And I love it so much. They are the best couple. And bonus, Leah of Hell is there. Oh my God.
Who is Leah of Hell?
In Gillen's run of Journey into Mystery, she is Loki's BFF.
Oh, okay.
And she has a really kind of, I don't know, complicated timeline. She is Hela's left hand, and then Loki like writes her backstory, and so it's kind of implied that she becomes Hela later on, or it's very kind of complicated and time loopy and weird, but terrible things happen to Leah of Hell, like terrible things that just crush me in a million pieces and leave me crying on the floor, which I love. But it's also nice to see her pop back up and be really funny. She makes fun of Angela and her metal bikini, which is awesome. And so Marguerite Bennett is killing it. I love it. More of Sarah and Angela, please, forever.
See, I'm trying to piece this together in my head. Where does Limbo fall into this? Because like Marvel has like 4 or 5 different versions of heaven and hell, and there's like Valhalla, and then there's hell, and then there's like Christian hell, because Christian hell is where magic from the X-Men like resides, and she rules over all the demons. And then there's a different hell where Ghost Rider comes from, and then there's like a big demon there. And then there's another version of hell where Dormammu lives, that's like Stephen Strange's or Doctor Strange's arch nemesis. And I mean this is
hell,
so
this is H-E-L,
right?
There's
this
only
is
one
the Norse
L in this
hell, right?
Yeah. And I think that you go here if you don't die gloriously in battle. That's like, if you die gloriously in battle, you go to Valhalla.
Yeah.
But plot twist, angels, yeah, like all the angels that from the 10th realm that die are like trapped in hell, and they like have a really shitty time there. So, Angela, like basically Angela's like, I'm taking this place over. Like there's a new queen in town, but she has to go through all of these trials, of course. And, you know, so she'll save the day. I believe in her.
So what is she, a goddess or a Valkyrie or?
Well, it turns out, spoiler alert, that she is Thor's older sister who, during the war between Asgard and the angel realm, She was kidnapped by the angels and thought killed, but really she was secretly raised as an angel. And I guess Odin got really pissed, so he banished the 10th realm, and that's why nobody knew about it until Loki found it, because of course he did.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Oh, man. Well,
I actually really liked Original Sin, the 10th realm miniseries. It was fun.
There were a couple little morsels that came out of Original Sin that were okay. I think the overarching story and what happened that was essentially moot was weird, but we got, you know, Bucky Barnes, Winter Soldier, and I'm 100% okay with that. So
definitely, I love that book.
If all that had to happen because we could get Ellis Cott and Marco Rudy going apeshit on drugs,
yes,
totally,
oh my god. I love that book so much. Yeah. And then also Angela's book after that, Asgard's Assassin, she steals her baby sister and throws her in a furnace.
What?
Okay, so she might not be the most likable character.
Yeah. Well, she had to burn the evil out of it.
Oh,
out
right.
of the baby.
I mean, that's what I do with evil babies too, obviously.
Yeah, me too.
What else are you going to do?
This is that's some like dark supernatural stuff. Oh my goodness.
What you do.
We should tweet this. I have actually a photo shoot from when I cosplayed Angela and my friend had just had a baby, so she let us borrow him as a prop.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, no.
Oh my goodness. Oh, I love it. I love it. Oh, okay. I'm going to move on because I have so many questions about baby burning. But
before we move on, can I ask, is this a good jumping on series if you're not familiar with the character, or should I start somewhere else?
You know, I would start with 10th Realm, honestly.
Okay.
And then read through Asgard's Assassin, which is, they're very short. They're like 5 issues each.
Yeah, Marvel's
so.
Rebooting every other week, so you're fine.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, you're good. You have like 10 things to read.
Cool.
If you wanted like a nice jaunt through 1602, you could read 1602 Angela, which is like 4 issues.
Okay.
Well, what I was excited for this week is Cry Havoc number 1, and I know Kate, I stole that from you, but these are two of my favorite creators ever coming together, and I don't know how this meetup happened between Simon Spurrier and Ryan Kelly. These are names that I can remember this week, not only because I put them in our notes, but because I love Simon Spurrier and I love Ryan Kelly. And I don't even know what this book is about. There's a whole synopsis online that's just a bunch of thumbs up and high fives of what these people have done in the past. Simon Spurrier, who did X-Men Legacy, and you don't need to ask about anything else that he did. Even if he did, you know, even if he's currently working on The Spire and he's done Six Gun Gorilla, which are both fantastic books, X-Men Legacy is all you need to know because it's the best X-Men story you can ever read, period, hands down, ever. And then Ryan Kelly, who has done fantastic work with Brian Wood, as well as Kieran Gillen. And as an artist, he has some of the best pencils and inks in the industry. And they're coming together to do a book about war and a lesbian werewolf. And the name is a play on Cry Wolf. And I could read this book all day. I don't even know what it's about. I haven't seen anything about it, but I know that it's going to be good. So are either of you looking forward to this book? Because I am going crazy thinking about it.
Super excited. Also, there has been so much hype on the interwebs about this.
Really? I feel like I haven't seen anything about this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
There's been a lot.
Okay.
You got to follow the right Tumblrs.
See, that's the thing. I'm not on Tumblr as much as I probably should be. I'm more of a Twitter person.
That's fair.
Dead silence. I realize that. I'm not actually into comic books because I'm not on Tumblr, so it's okay. Shame.
Oh, yeah.
It's good for like tweeting at people you love and sometimes getting a reply, but mostly
I cannot be contained in 140 characters.
Exactly.
All right?
Exactly.
I need gifts of Finn and Poe kissing, and that's just not going to be contained in tweets.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
Yeah. So this week I was hoping that we could talk about comics that are the ones that got away, comic series that we used to love and why we stopped loving them and where they're at now. This idea came to me when I was reading Brian Azzarello's Wonder Woman, which is a really great book for volume 1 and volume 2, and volume 3, 4, and maybe 5 are just solid good books, and then 6 is And at 7, I haven't even read. And so when I heard that it was being canceled, I was like, well, it's good to put it out of its misery. and that got me thinking about other series like that where I was super into it. And then I ended up canceling it from my pull list because one thing or another happened. And a lot of times that thing is different teams got put on or taken off books. So someone came or left. But sometimes it's the exact same people and it just kind of falls apart. And so I was wondering if you guys had any experiences with that and what you think and what's going on.
I can definitely say that I've done that with a handful of books over the, 8 years of reading comics. You know, for a while I was only reading trades. There's a whole history to that where I was only reading trades and then I eventually was like, screw it. I got to start reading single issues. I got to get this month-to-month story. And so since then, you know, you pick up a book, you read a couple of issues, and then it kind of maybe disappears. So the series that really, that definitely got me the first time, I should say I have two series that I can definitely think of recent history, were Constantine, the series that started with the New 52 like a year or two later, and it ran for, I think, like 12 issues. And it tied into all the crossover events, and it was kind of just sad. And since I hadn't read any Hellblazer or anything, I was really excited to read Constantine from scratch and, like, get a new origin story, like all the other new 52 characters. And for probably 4 months, I was just pushing through, just trying to say, all right, it's going to pick up after this tie-in. And the way that they tied it into, I think, Trinity of Sin was kind of cool, but really, I just did not care about the character. He was really bastardy and it was really weak written and I just couldn't care about him. I had no want to read that book anymore. So I just dropped it and it was really unfortunate. But of course the new Constantine the Hellblazer series came out and I can't plug that book enough because it's so amazing and it is the best DC book that I read. Superman American Alien is a very, very, very close second, but Constantine the Hellblazer is way better. And so that book was, I don't know, but the first Constantine New 52 book was just a disappointment, so I dropped it. And I think that, like I said, I think it ended 12 issues, at 12 issues or 13 issues or something.
Yeah, they pulled the plug. It wasn't, yeah, it rightfully wasn't very so. Good.
It wasn't very good. But the other book that I can think of was Egos, which is an Image book. It was this sci-fi story that was pretty original in the sense that it was like based in the super far future where everyone lived on like remote planets and in satellites and giant ships. And there was this superhero team from the golden age of superheroes in space or whatever. And they had retired and the two like leads of the team were married and they got divorced. And one character, one of the guy decided that he wanted to bring the team back together and he had found all these new heroes. And it turns out that they were all clones of him. But he had like manipulated them to give them all their own unique powers and different looks and stuff like that. And it was really cool. And I liked the first arc. And after 4 issues, the series just stopped coming out. And I was really confused because it didn't really end perfectly. It seemed like there was more story to tell. And then eventually it started to pick up again. And I was so just out of the story, totally lost everything. I went back and reread the first 4 issues and trying to read the newer issues. And it just lost all the energy that it had. And I think it's still going. I think the 9th issue came out, but I stopped at issue 7. And I was really bummed because I liked the story. I liked the original idea, and it just really, really petered out. So, I don't know. I haven't looked at the most recent issue, but I have no interest to anymore. And it's really, really unfortunate. What about you two? Or what about you, I guess, Tia?
I actually tend to really power through things and stick with them. And I think that part of that comes from, especially since I started this job where I work now and I can read a lot of things for free, so I can stick with things and it's really, you know, no skin off my nose. It's not an investment of my money necessarily. Things that I want to support, I definitely buy, sometimes in multiple forms, because I feel really strongly about supporting books that you care about and that you, feel really are really important. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, though, like I would buy Storm because I thought it was really important to have a Storm book. And I know that, it's a big deal to have a woman of color as the main protagonist. And I just wasn't really into it. And after a while, I did stop reading that one. And I felt terrible. And I think I even bought a few issues and didn't even read them. But I just was like, you know, I don't want it to get canceled. I know that because it's like, it's intellectually like an important contribution, but I'm not enjoying reading it necessarily. I have stopped buying Storm. A book that I literally just gave up on and forgot about was The New 52 Clarion.
And what book is that? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it.
Which is maybe why it's done, right?
I don't even know how many issues it made it to, maybe six. I was like, oh, this is kind of boring. I'll wait for the trade. And then I guess the trade never happened, and I just forgot about it.
Nick is going to have a conniption now when he hears this.
I honestly hadn't thought about it in ages, and then I was looking through my old digital comic accounts to see what was in there that I just hadn't looked at in a long time, and I was like, oh, yeah, whatever happened to Clarion?
So, for me, Elektra, back when they did the reboot for Marvel, however long ago this was now, I think 2 years, and they had Del Mundo doing the art for every issue, and the writing was terrible, so the only reason to read it was that each issue was an incredible work of art. And then they stopped having him on every issue with number six, but were real sneaky about it. Like, they still had him do the cover, and it was still his name and the writer on the cover. And then the inside, it was like, oh, surprise, it's a different person, but you're still paying, you know, the $4 or whatever to get this. And so I canceled it from my pull list because, like, the story wasn't good. So there was really no reason unless he was doing all the art. So then, fast forward a few months, I go to C2E2, the convention in Chicago, for the first time. And who's there but Del Mundo? And so I bring all my Elektra comics with me that he did the art on. And I'm all excited to get them signed and everything. And I wait forever in line. And I get up there and I'm like, oh my gosh, I love your stuff so much, blah, 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 you know, and give him my stuff. And the artist that replaced him was sitting next to him too, Sanchez, I don't remember his first name, and he's like, oh, you know, here, you know, he worked on it too, and passes my stuff. I'm like, no, I don't want him to sign it.
No.
And like, and I specifically didn't bring anything he worked on, and so all my books now are signed by both of them, which kind of makes me upset. But, and I, like, even said, like, no, just you. And he's like, no, he worked on it, too. And, like, they're sitting next to each other at the same table, you know, and passing it to him or whatever. So fast forward a few more months, the series gets canceled, and all the back issues that my comic shop had ended up in their 50-cent bin. And so I was able to dig through and find the few issues, you know, because he was spotty doing every now and then some of them still that Del Mundo still did, and picked them up for 50 cents, and so I still got them, and that feels good.
I remember that book coming out because I was really excited because it was W. Hayden Blackman, who had worked on, you know, the Batwoman series with J.H. Williams, and I was really hoping that book was going to be good, and I read the first issue and I just couldn't see myself continuing. I just was not into it. And I remember Xander saying that he kept reading it in the same way that you did, Kate, because Del Mundo's art was just so great. And he eventually was just like, the story was so weak, and it ended up being more about the villains that she was trying to fight and not about her. And he was really hoping that it was going to be a story digging into Elektra, like actually telling her story. But instead, it was just like her fighting guys, and there was no introspection.
It was the most anime storyline I've ever seen, where each episode or issue, if you will, is you go to the place and you fight the big baddie, and then the next week you fight the bigger, badder baddie, and then you go to another place and fight, like, it's, which, you know, it's a way of storytelling, I guess, but it's very superficial. But I do the same thing Tia does, where I try and support books with female leads, and especially whenever, my big thing is whenever they give a big name mantle to a female character, like they did recently with Thor and with Wolverine.
Oh,
I always pick those first up, even if they do like they like to do, where they're like, this is a supersized issue, so give us all your money.
Yeah, it's supersized with an extra 2 pages.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Fortunately, I think that Thor and Wolverine are both worth it. So,
oh, yeah,
I
absolutely.
Don't
those
mind
are
at all.
Cool. Probably my favorite X-Men book right now, hands down.
Yes.
The last issue
I recently saw. I recently saw someone on social media saying, like, hey, everybody, we really want like a Kate Bishop and an X-23 TV series. Can you make that happen? And I'm like, put them together. Oh my God.
What?
Do it.
They would be best friends.
I don't even know. You know what?
Guest appearance by Miss America Chavez.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, if I could cast a vote for TV series, I would say that I would totally watch an X-23 Black Widow series, like 6-issue mini, because that issue of Black Widow when they teamed up was one of my absolute favorites of the whole Black Widow run. But I mean, sorry.
But it would be so serious.
So dark, and
they need Kate to like lighten the mood.
Lighten it up.
Yeah.
I'm also really hesitant to say ask anyone to put Black Widow in any film because of what they've done to her.
No, I know.
In all the films.
Take
so I'm
her
just
away
like,
from them.
Yeah,
but
no.
Just this would be their chance to fix it with like a six-issue episode miniseries where they just fix all the problems with Black Widow.
It was a fever dream.
Exactly.
So to get back to the main topic, though, what I mean, obviously we drop books because they're not good and we support them. Is there value in maybe checking out a book that is still going on? Like maybe you drop a book because you don't like it, but it still continues to go on because maybe it sells well for a different demographic or just other people like it. Is there value in checking that book out later to see, oh, you know, maybe there actually was something and I missed a big concept, or I guess have you guys ever had that happen to you?
Oh, absolutely. So the thing that instantly comes to mind for me is with Scott Snyder's Batman, the fourth arc was just so not my cup of tea, but it was just that arc that I didn't like, the one with Red Hood. The Red Hood gang.
Yeah,
and so,
I haven't read any of Batman because I'm a bad person, and I'll say that every week on this podcast.
I have not read
that
any
is so
Batman.
Sad for you. Oh my gosh, you guys!
And
Scott
in fact,
Snyder, get on board.
In fact, Batgirl was one of my books that I tried and stopped reading.
Same here.
Yeah.
Same here.
Yeah, I'm not a big Batgirl fan either.
Aren't they all the same? They're just like Bat people. I don't know.
You're hurting me now, Tia, because Batwoman is the ultimate best character ever.
But did you keep reading Batman after that arc? Or have you
To
stopped?
Be honest, I was like, nah, I'm done. This series didn't go like I totally thought it was one that petered out where that arcs 1, 2, and 3 were great and then 4 wasn't, and I was like, yeah, I don't need to keep reading this. And then like 10 different people told me, oh my god, no, yeah, that was a weak one, but you got to keep going because 5's amazing, it'll blow your mind. And so I did, and sure enough, it was just that one arc that wasn't great. And so yeah, that's, I think there's definitely value sometimes in pushing through. I think for me, a lot of times I will stop investing money in it and will maybe pick up the trade once it comes to my local library.
Yeah, that's a good way to sample things.
Yeah.
Any book that's running to 5+ arcs, not every issue and maybe not even every arc is going to be good. Like, that's just, you know, not everything that you make is good. And hopefully a lot of things are. You know, The Walking Dead, I think, is a great example. They just put out their 150th issue. And I'm like, I lost interest in this so long ago because there's only so many different things you can do with this.
Yep.
Whenever
I don't think we're making
people complain about the show and the, you know, the comics are too perfect, I'm like, have you read the comics though? Have you? For how long? Because
yeah,
it's pretty redundant.
Yeah, and I don't think we're making any friends by saying that, but I mean, Walking Dead, I think, is one of those. I think it suffers from the same problem that any major long running book does, where. Mm-hmm. There is only so much you can do with this story. And you run into this issue, and I'm only going to bring it back to the X-Men because that's all that I know. But you run into this with the X-Men, and that's why you see so many reboots and so many changes, because Marvel is trying to break out of that habit. And it's so hard with the X-Men. I think you run into the same with the Avengers in some regards. And, I mean, John Hickman's most recent run on everything aside, I think that, you know, up until that point, like, they were just running into this circle of just repetitive stories over and over, where it's like we can only raise the bar so high to make the stakes so high before we finally say we've run into Dragon Ball Z and we are Goku Super Saiyan 55 and it's you know, they're blowing up worlds with a single, you know, finger punch. It's insane.
This is why Fractions Hawkeye was so popular, because it's just like, why just put a different lens on these people for you know, however many issues we got.
From Pizza Dog's perspective.
Oh,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I love Matt Fraction's Hawkeye is one of my all-time favorite comic series.
Me too.
But when when I the idea came to me, this Wonder Woman thing, I think that was the exact issue that they ran into, was it just went for too long. And I think part of it was that they didn't anticipate the series being so popular. I mean, it was a weirdly super popular series for the New 52. And so it went, I don't want to say really easy, but it was pretty obvious where the story was going to go and stop and like a good conclusion point. And then they had to stretch it past that. And that's where it started getting it stopped being amazing. And
damn,
then it stopped
capitalism
being good.
Just ruining our art.
Right?
Perfect.
Well, that's why
art.
I really like when they do set lengths of series. Like, this is going to be 12 issues or this is going to be 6 issues. Mm-hmm. And so then they know where they're going and they have the freedom to set up. And I think a lot of times that is a much better way to tell a good story than it is to tell in an ongoing. I mean, ongoings obviously have their place and I love them, but
a good story has a good ending.
Exactly. Yeah. So in the stuff that this is terrible that I don't remember the names, but I Kill Giants.
Oh, yeah,
everyone
Joe
pushed
Kelly.
So hard for more of that. And he said, no, what made this so good is that we had this set run and we were able then to tell the story within a certain frame, and going past that would really degrade it. And apparently they were offered a lot of money to go past it, too, and they said no.
Yeah, that book needed no more. It was a perfect,
exactly,
well-told
exactly.
story. And I think, and to kind of pivot the conversation a little bit, have the two of you heard of this? I at least I see it a lot on Twitter, just the people that I follow on Twitter, but there is this movement for people saying, why doesn't DC shift, since they're doing this whole rebirth thing, and we really don't know what it is, and so I don't want to speculate too much. But at the same time, I have to wonder, or the people are calling for this idea of, why doesn't DC shift to doing seasons of comics? Mm-hmm. Like, where they say, you know, here's Wonder Woman season 1, and they do 12 or 20 issues, and then they stop, change creative teams, and do another season. And they don't have to necessarily rehash. They can maybe continue the continuity, or they can start fresh every 2 or 4 years or something like that. Rather than trying to draw out this story and tie into this giant continuity, they could say, we're going to do a season or two of, or a year or two of this character, and it's going to be considered a season. And then all the other books that are alongside of it, you know, your Batman, your Superman, your Justice League, all tie into that season continuity. But then at the end, we start fresh and we tell stories again, you know, from a brand new perspective, from a brand new angle.
That would be really interesting, because that creates obvious jumping on points without having it be like every 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is... I like that idea.
So, I mean, I'm curious to see how it would play out in terms of, you know, the economics of things, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know if either of you had opinions on that other than I had just heard about it very recently with the whole rebirth announcement from DC.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that a really important part of this conversation is the fact that, you know, you kind of mentioned this earlier, but like you can only do so much with characters that have been around since, like, I don't know, the 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
You know, these characters have just been around forever, and there's only so many stories you can tell about them. And this is a big reason why I read a lot of Image books, because I feel like the big two characters, like, they just have this, you know, box of legacy characters that they keep bringing out over and over again, and I don't stay as interested.
Absolutely.
Right. But how do we deal with long-term independent books such as a Saga or a Walking Dead? Like, we cited that was kind of a, you know, a recurring recycled story over and over. Should the creators then say, okay, here is a final endpoint, or should they be allowed to just run free reign? I think that there aren't a lot, but there are a handful of books that are still going on and have been going on for hundreds of issues, or maybe 100 or 200 issues. And people are still reading them every week, hand over fist. Like, it's readers.
And the thing that comes to mind for me is, if you do the seasons things, these ongoings that have these really devoted fan bases of a certain creative team with a certain book, like Walking Dead or Saga, those are the ones making the money for the company so that then they can put out the stuff that Tia and I like to read. You know
That's
what I mean?
True.
Like,
that
those,
is true.
Those little independents that...
Thanks, Walking Dead.
Exactly. Yeah. We appreciate you for funding. They keep the offices open, which I appreciate. So even if it's not for me, It's clearly for somebody because, you know, you go to Comixology and you see the top 10 pulls of that week and it's always on there. So,
yeah,
that's true. All right.
I know, right? It's like,
yeah, I mean, I understand a person wanting to never be without a certain character. You know, I do understand that. I wonder how much these publishers could learn from fan fiction and fan art, frankly, because mm-hmm. a lot of times people will just, you know, obsessively consume art and writing about these characters that they love and they mm-hmm. never get tired of it. But in these fan created spaces, they're telling different stories. They're coming at it from different angles. They're doing innovative things with these characters.
Yeah.
And I frankly think that the publishers have a lot to learn from these spaces where, I mean, I know that the point of is ultimately to make money as a publisher, but mm-hmm. like there are a lot of people reading these things that that fans make, and they have a different perspective and people want to read it.
So you say that there's these same characters and how many stories can you tell with the same character, same origin? But then, yeah, with fan fiction, you do get different stories. And so, okay, look, what's the big difference? Oh, right. They're not all middle-aged white men.
Oh, so
put really? Some different, like, wow. Put a little diversity in there and you can yeah. tell different stories from oh different God. Perspectives.
You know, Kay, I'd never thought of that, but wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm really confused as to where the sarcasm line is here right now. Hold on. Okay, I mean, yes, we can absolutely acknowledge that there's a diversity issue here. But I think it also does call back to the idea of economics. Now, but to continue your point, like we are missing a lot of people in the industry. But it's also a matter of, I wonder, volume? Like how many books can you actually publish that can be viable and purchasable by people? You know, like where is the line that they draw on? What is a sellable, what is a successful book, you know, printing costs or whatever, creation costs and how much, you know, the creators charge for these things versus the quantity of books that are being sold, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to like minimize the point because I think, Tia, to your point, there are a lot of people reading these books and writing them, or not books, but like these stories, and there are a lot of people that are invested in them. I know you were telling me the other day about the whole Mad Max background with various characters, and I couldn't believe that online there are like these fleshed out characters that are just minor pieces in the Mad Max Fury Road movie. And that just blows my mind. I mean, but if there is a calling, then why aren't these things being picked up, I think is the question.
I think that they're not being picked up because I don't understand why teenage girls' money isn't as good, but I think that people feel like a fan base that is comprised of young women is somehow not serious or not as good. Things that are associated with teenage girls are often by definition ridiculous to the status quo, or they're made to seem ridiculous. And so mm-hmm. I think also there's this problem of things that are created by people outside of the status quo, which typically is like straight white guys. People have this misconception that if a book is written by a woman or the character is a woman, then it's for women.
Yes, and exactly.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I love that your favorite X-Men is X-23. Like the
same thing as girls.
Yeah. I think that it's a matter of educating audiences and changing this idea that if something is written for some, written by someone who doesn't look like a white guy, then it's not for white guys. Like the rest of us read books about dudes all the time. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, so it's just, I think changing the idea of what's the default, and that audiences who are brought up believing that they're the default may have a hard time coming along.
Absolutely.
That's my feminist rant for the day. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I
you're so spot on, though.
Totally, yeah, I totally agree. I think that's a really interesting thought to think that someone would consider the idea that if someone who is outside of the status quo couldn't possibly write a book for, you know, the majority of purchasers. And I have to wonder, if we take a step back, how often do you, I mean, we are obviously comic book obsessed, but how many people do you think actually go and do their research on a creator and see, oh, what's their background? Who are they? Are they a guy or a girl? And maybe I'm like assuming people aren't as invested in comics as maybe we are, but a lot of times you just see a name on a book and you go, whatever, it's Superman. I'm just going to read a Superman book. You know, mm-hmm. And you don't really know who the creator is. And if you like it or you don't like it, maybe then you look into it. But if we're worried about like a number one on a new creative team, you know, are people following writers as closely as we think, or are they just following characters or following stories? So
no, there's actually been they've looked into this and people do tend to follow creators more than characters now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Certain creators have quite really strong fan bases. When you look at like Gail Simone and Scott Snyder and Karen Gillian, like they have enough of their own fan bases now that whatever they put their name on turns into a financial success.
Yeah, that's true.
More or less, because people, at least at the very get-go, because people will buy it just for their name. But I think outside of that, those really big names, I think, Mike, that you're right in that. Sometimes that gets shifted instead of looking at and being biased against certain creators that are more diverse. People look at certain titles and like, oh, you're a girl, you read Batgirl or Batwoman, you don't read Batman, or, you know, that kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm.
Or I'm a dude, so I can't read
Saga
female
or,
Thor. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Oh, Thor's not for me anymore. I mean, the amount of whining on the internet because Captain America's black or
right?
Thor's a girl. It's like, oh, I guess I can't read that anymore. And it's like, well,
they took away my character. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop.
You can still relate to this human being. I'm certain of it. Mm-hmm. You are a human being as well.
I mean, I think Ms. Marvel is such a great example of like, hey, actually, yes, we're all human beings, even if we're not all like teenage Muslim girls, we can still invest in this character. So just shut up and read it already.
And
then thank me later.
Yeah.
That one's so perfect because they also have somewhat like the G. Willow Wilson writing it, who can actually write from that perspective versus sometimes they're like, oh, we're going to have this token diverse character but still have, you know, a white guy write it, and then they end up just being not actually diverse, like their skin is a different color but they're still a white person, you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
culturally,
exactly.
In the way they act and talk and behave,
it's completely hollow to say, oh yeah, I'm gonna support this, you know, African-American character if you are not also supporting African-American creators, as in,
exactly.
For example.
Right.
So yeah, I really love that Ms. Marvel is written by a Muslim woman because, you know, the creators are really the people who we need to be supporting here in terms of diversity, because they're the ones who are going to bring the content.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast, a Destroy the Cyborg production. This episode was produced by Mike Rappin and edited by Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Gas Lab and Infinity Shred. To those of you listening on iTunes or Stitcher, we'd love it if you would take a quick moment to rate us. Your comments and ratings help others find the show and let us know how we're doing. If you have questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythecyb.org. If email's not your speed, feel free to shoot us a message on Twitter @destroythecyb or through the hashtag IReadComicBooks. You can also definitely find us on Tumblr @destroythecyborg and also on our subreddit at ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. And again, thank you for listening.
Isn't this what you wanted, Mike, to turn into our soapbox?
Hey.
This is what you get for having Tia
and I
on together.
No, I'm sorry. We're done.
But not really.
The podcast is done. We are done talking about that. That was like the perfect sum up right there at the end. It's not even the topic, but
Mike,
I'm fine
drop.
With that. That was perfect. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's... why would I be mad about this conversation? I don't know. The thing is, you know, I run into this problem. Like, I would love to be able to talk about these things, but I don't necessarily have the complete ability to, you know?
But you know what? You have a platform, and so that you make it available so that these conversations can happen is a really important contribution.
What I want this podcast to be, hands down. I mean, and Xander is, I'm 100% certain, right there with me with it about that. So, so thank you.
Hi,
thank you for bringing, I mean, thank you for bringing it up. I did not think that's where the topic was going to go, about catching up on books, but I'm totally fine with it being that.